Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to Eat Your Heartland Out, a show about the intersection of food and culture in the American Midwest. Thank you for listening to one of our five special episodes in collaboration with Great Lakes Now from Detroit Public Media. I'm your host, Capri Cafaro. This is the third episode in our special series of Eat Your Heartland Out in collaboration with Great Lakes Now from Detroit Public Media. And this is a special episode for me because it takes you to my home state of Ohio. It's about great wine on the Great Lakes. And believe it or not, Ohio produces some great wine on the north coast of Lake Erie. I'll be joined by Lori Lalik-Lee, and she'll talk to me about the specialized programs offered at Kent State University Ashtabula campus to train the next generation of winemakers and grape growers. Lori's going to be joining me a little bit later in the show. But right now, I want to bring in Daniela Winchell. She's the executive director of the Ohio Wine Producers Association. Donnie, who's someone that I know, has been working in the wine and tourism industry for decades. So she's an expert on all things Ohio wine. Donnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Oh, we are happy to have you. So you are like the wine guru of the Buckeye State. And you know it's true, and you know, I know it's true as well. So a lot of people, you know, are sometimes surprised that the Great Lakes and places like Ohio actually have a wine country or produce wine at all. You and I are not surprised by that because we live with it every day. But tell me and the audience more particularly about the wine regions across the state of Ohio and kind of what makes them different.
Well, the state is divided into a number of areas, and we do have grapes growing in nearly every county in Ohio. But for this purpose, the focal point will be the south shore of Lake Erie. And the reason the grapes grow there is because of that amazing Great Lake. It is the shallowest of the Great Lakes, but in our case, it is most influential on providing us an ability to grow great fruit. We have several growing regions that are federally recognized by the U.S. government. We are regulated by TTB. And even they say that the Lake Erie region, which extends from nearly Toledo into Chautauqua, New York, and the Grand River Valley, which is a tiny dot within that region, Isle St. George, which is the northernmost of the American islands in the lake, and soon, very soon, hopefully, there will be one attributed to Conneaut Creek.
Really? Fantastic news.
Right. Good news. Exciting for all of us. We've been working on Conneaut Creek for a couple of years, and here we're coming along.
That's great.
The reason that these are so special is that the federal government actually identifies these microclimates. There are places in Ohio along Lake Erie that are a mile and a half or 2 miles apart. And from one point to the other, we can grow some of the best vinifera winning gold medals in California. And just a mile and a half away, they can't grow anything because spring frost is so intense in the lower areas.
Well, microclimates are no joke then.
They are not. Lake Erie provides a general temperature moderation. In the fall, when the lake is warm, the winds blow across the lake and are trapped by what we call the escarpments. In our area there, along the lake, there are roads called Middle Ridge, North Ridge, South Ridge, and those actually represent the ridges of the ancient lakes. So when the breezes come from the north across the lake onto the land, those ridges, those escarpments, trap the air and drop it. So in an area like east of Cleveland or west of Cleveland, when the growing season continues for another 2 or 3 weeks, our friends south in Trumbull and Mahoning counties have already frosted their tomatoes. The opposite happens in the spring. in the spring when the lake is very cold, and it is very cold, those breezes come across. The winds come from the lake. They are trapped by the escarpment. They drop, and they prevent early bud break. So in a year when spring frosts come, the buds are protected. They are protected within those little shells, so the frost doesn't damage them nearly as badly. So the lake provides the reason we grow is because of Lake Erie. But then these microclimates are created. It's no accident that the Grand River Valley, the GRV, AVA, the American Viticulture Area, is named after the river because it's a very deep gorge and air, just like water, drains. So on cold spring nights, the warm air rises, the cold air drops onto the riverbed, and the lakes, the river provides some temperature moderation. When I have friends come from D.C., and we do a lot of work with folks all over the East Coast, when they come to visit, they say, oh my goodness, that Grand isn't very grand. It's awfully skinny and deep because they're used to the Potomac and the Susquehanna, which are wide and broad. But really, the gorges help us grow those grapes. Same thing happens in Conneaut Creek. A little bit of a different circumstance happens on Isle St. George and the other Lake Erie Islands. They are surrounded by water. So they are consistently a little more moderately, the temperatures moderate a little less because the water keeps temperatures more consistent. In addition, those lake breezes prevent mildew from settling. So we have lots of, and grapes are tightly clustered, especially the vinifera ones, the things like Chardonnay and Riesling. The tight clusters can accumulate in those creeks and crevices can accumulate molds and mildew. When the breezes blow off the lake, that is very much mitigated. So the lake is the reason we exist as a wine industry in Ohio.
Well, you've given us like an incredible 1,000-foot view with actually quite a bit of detail on the role that the lake plays in the success of grape growing and winemaking on Ohio's north coast and Lake Erie. You mentioned the Grand River Valley. That is something that is east of Cleveland. I know correct. That, and that's where I am from and where you are based. You know, there certainly are wineries and grape growing that happens on the west side as well, all the way up into those Lake Erie Islands and Kelly's Island, Put-in Bay, et cetera, South Bass Island. On that side, on the west side, the Western Basin. That overview that you provided really, I think, has given me and the listeners a good understanding that we can actually grasp without a lot of, scientific, verbiage, which I know having worked on this issue, it can get a little bit overwhelming, to understand the role that the lake plays in creating that appropriate climate for the type of grapes that you need in order to make good wine, because it's not just any grape. You know, you mentioned, grapes, for example, that make good Chardonnay, and that a number of the wines that we have are actually award-winning. And I want to stick on that for just a minute, because I do know that there are some wines that have actually beat, California wines, and they're from Ohio. So let's use this opportunity to shine a spotlight on that good work.
Sure. There are lots of very credible, very reputable competitions all over the country. But the granddaddy of them all is the San Francisco Chronicle competition. And so I'll use that as our best example. 20 years ago, I got a call from a fellow named Anthony Diaz Blue. He was the then editor of, I believe, Gourmet Magazine. And he said to me in his very thick accent, I have this Riesling here. Where is it from? It just won Best White Wine. And this was 40 years ago, 1982. That was a watershed for us. We had never gotten any of that kind of recognition, but it launched the opportunity for our wineries to believe in themselves and to begin planting grapes that could produce fine wines. This 2 years ago, we won Best Dessert Wine with Ice Wine. The year before that, we won Best Dessert with Ice Wine, again, all in the San Francisco competition, which has wines entered from all over the world, more than 9,000 entries. 2 years ago, this was another watershed, if you will. We won Best Chardonnay, unoaked Chardonnay, in the under $15 category, which is like the fighting varietals. We have won awards again and again. We grow something called cool climate whites. Cool climate whites are things like Riesling and Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Pinot Grigio, Gruner Veltliner, Gewürztraminer, things that require cool nights, long growing season, and hot summers. And we have most years the opportunity to do those. We don't do really well when we need an extended season. We grow a little bit of Cabernet Franc, a little bit of Pinot Noir, but the big reds, like those produced in Napa Valley, we typically don't do exceptional things with, although we do nice ones. So we have begun to turn heads. There's a winery over in Vermilion Valley that is just appointed to the National Research Arm, in part because he's growing some killer Cab Franc. So we do things that turn people's heads, that are approachable, that are interesting, and that are well-balanced. A well-balanced wine has a little bit of acid backbone and sometimes a hint of sweetness, sometimes dry, but well-balanced with complexity. And we can do those in the climate varietals, and we prove our worth every year, again and again. We have over 800 medals the last couple of years in national competitions, including a plethora of them from the San Francisco judging.
Wow. I mean, that is a lot to be really proud of. And I think something that people are really probably very surprised about.
Actually, when I took this job many, many years ago, Ohio only produced Sweet Concords and Catawbas. And it takes a very long time for, one, the wineries to figure out what can be grown in the climate that we have. And number two, for those grapes to mature. And then finally, for the consumer to understand that we're doing some exciting things. Right. So to tell those stories, the association and many of our winery friends have begun to develop festivals and outreach. We draw 2.5 million people to our wineries in Ohio a year.
Wow.
But in a population of Ohio size, what, 7-8 million, whatever we have these days, we need to do some outreach. So these events, these festivals that we do, these wine trails that we do, are designed to convince consumers who may not take the drive into wine country that we are doing something exciting and interesting.
So tell me about these trails and these festivals. I know there are a number of them on the North Coast. I believe Shores and Islands on the west side, and I think Vines and Wines on the east side.
Sure.
What are these, something that people can, you know, follow along all year round, or is this seasonal?
Well, it depends on the season. We try not to do them in the summer because the wineries are very, very busy. But in the shoulder season, and the shoulder seasons of spring and fall, and then right before Christmas, when we're obviously looking to get some Christmas gift sales, we have a series of events. West of Cleveland, we have something called Deck the Wreath, where folks gather, they pick a large 25, 30-inch wreath, and at each winery they visit, they have an ornament that they can hang on the wreath, and they have a couple samples of wine and a little bit of food to match. On the east side of town, we do something called Tannenbaum Trail. We collect a little Christmas tree, and again, each of the wineries, you collect an ornament and do some wine sampling. Those are designed for a demographic that maybe doesn't know a lot about wine, but looking for fun, looking for an experience.
Right.
There's a lot of girlfriend travel. There's a lot of mother and daughter travel. There's a lot of couple travel.
I've done it all in every possible birthdays, couple trip, like the whole nine. I've done it, and I bring everybody that comes to town, and, you know, just day trips. I mean, there are so many opportunities, because you don't have to know a lot about wine to enjoy wine country. And I think that's one of the real, you know, attractive things about it. And the fact that there's that proximity to the lake, which creates a different type of ambiance as well.
Absolutely. There was a fellow named Jean Bonnet, well-known California author, contributor, was here several years ago. And he said, coming to the North Coast of Ohio and visiting the wineries is a non-intimidating environment where you can learn about wine in a relaxed and fun atmosphere. And I sort
Amen.
Of wear that. I wear that moniker on my head. It really is for people who are intimidated and will not say Gewürztraminer, rather call it gee whiz. after several trips to a winery where they can practice their pronunciation and not be embarrassed, they will comfortably walk into a restaurant and say, I want that Gewürztraminer 2007 from XYZ Winery, with all kinds of confidence. So, you know, we talk about the wineries as a destination for people on a regular basis. Those millions that come every summer to visit us, those hundreds of thousands every weekend. Maybe we'll travel to Napa or Sonoma or Walla Walla or maybe even France or Italy once or twice in a lifetime. But the wineries are accessible. There is a winery in Ohio within 35 minutes of every single resident. So we can provide a fun environment, relaxing. And even during COVID, we advertised during COVID social distancing on 30 acres. So there was an opportunity to relax, enjoy, and experience all that we had to offer, even under those trying circumstances.
Yes, yes. I recall going up to some of the wineries in the Grand Valley during that time as well. And it really was, you know, a really pleasant experience to have that, you know, outdoor social distancing and in a relaxed environment and in a beautiful setting. And, you know, you've mentioned a couple times about the, you know, volume of individuals that have come into Ohio to experience the wineries. What does that translate into in regards to Ohio's economy?
Well, it's really interesting. We're about $6.5 billion in total economic impact throughout the state. But what's interesting is it's more than just visiting the wineries. 30 years ago, when I first took this job, there was a handful of wineries in the along the south shore of Lake Erie. Now there are several hundred, and those several hundred people are driving the construction of hotels. They are exploding with beds and breakfasts and where people come. 85% of the wineries, 85% of the B&Bs in the Grand River Valley exist because of the wine business. So beyond and people don't go to an area to sleep. They go to an area to view the beautiful lake. Those beautiful sunset with a glass of wine in hand, our spectacular lodge on the South Shore, beautiful facility.
Unbelievable five-star facility,
lovely, and all kind. But there are all kinds of accommodations for all prices. You know, we've got a lot of flag hotels, and we have a lot of B&Bs, and we have this spectacular lodge. Same thing is going on the west side of town. Another example are the livery services. There are currently 60 livery services servicing the wineries between Toledo and Conneaut, Ohio.
And let me tell you something, they're hard to book. They're always booked.
They're growing all the time. I happen to live in a little community called Geneva on the Lake in the summer, and someone just bought 7 more of those little minivans with 10 or 12 passengers. They visit the wineries. We're working with the folks over on the west side of town to get launch a number of those. We're working with some folks in Amish country to launch a number of those.
So people visit the wineries,
enjoy their experience, get there safely, go back to a hotel and relax for the evening. So it is an economic engine. Musicians, we do a survey periodically with the musicians. There are about $3 million spent on musicians, the wineries that I cited before, just hiring folks to entertain the guests that arrive. That's annually.
Sure.
So the wineries have become an economic engine with a demographic average household income. About 120,000, 26% have postgraduate degrees. So it's a very desirable demographic for restaurants and everybody else.
And I would say that the demographic really does, when it comes from the age demographic, I think really runs the gamut as well. I mean, you have everything from families to retirees, as you said, you know, sort of the girlfriend groups, moms and daughters, spa weekends to couples. Even things that are pet friendly, which you know, I really appreciate with my dog, being able to bring your pet to some of these places and hang out outside while listening to live music and doing a tasting, having cheese, that sort of thing, is really an attractive tourist you know, beacon.
And it is attracting generational marketing. Grandparents feel comfortable bringing the you know, 21-year-old grandkids, and they bring the puppies because sometimes they don't have any more grandkids, so they bring their grand dogs. And we do a lot of events. The wineries themselves do lots of individual activities. And beyond the trails, we do these big festivals. We have a giant festival.
I was just going to ask. I'm glad you brought it up, because if you didn't, I would have asked you about Vintage Ohio. And Island Wine Festival.
And Island Wine. And in the fall, we have one up near Bowling Green. So we have three major festivals in the North Coast area. Vintage Ohio, the granddaddy, of course, was the first of its kind and actually is a model for festivals all over the country. I speak at least twice or three times a year in other states talking about this festival as a tool for economic development. And so this year will be the first year for our Port and Bay event. We're very excited. June 17th is coming. And then, of course, Vintage Ohio is the first Friday and Saturday in August. And then in October, we'll head over to Bowling Green and pull some folks down from Southwest Michigan, Southeast yep. Michigan, Northwest Indiana, and try and tell the Ohio wine story extending beyond our borders.
That's so exciting. I just am so pleased to have this opportunity to share Ohio's story always. I mean, I'm a proselytizer when it comes to sharing the Midwestern story, but that comes from the heart of it all. And the heart of it all is back, as you know. The heart
of it all is now.
Once again, Ohio's slogan. And it seems like, you know, Ohio is quite the heart of it all when it comes to wine as well. What's on the horizon for Ohio wine producers, particularly on the North Coast? As you mentioned, there's significant growth and has been over the last three decades. I would assume that that growth is going to continue.
Actually, I know, and I try and keep track. There are 425 wineries in Ohio now. When I started, there were 13. And there are 57 applications pending. Of those 57, at least 30 are in the North Coast area. So it takes a year or two or three or sometimes five for a winery from the initial concept to think about what you might launch to opening your front doors. But we are looking at a very, very bright future. We're looking to work with those Zs, that coming generation, providing some fun experiences. So it's not just about wine drinking. It's about that total experience of immersion in a quality of life and a wine culture that complements a fun way to live, as long as it's done in moderation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I say again, I mean, having had an opportunity to experience particularly my backyard in the North Coast on the east side, Ashtabula County, that Grand River Valley area. I mean, it is certainly about the wine, but it's really more about the total experience. You know, you feel like you are in Provence in Italy, in France, in some of these wineries where you're outside amongst the vines and, you know, the nice little cottage and, you know, the wooden swing. And I mean, it's such a nice environment. And it is this real, you know, it is a lifestyle in many ways.
Well, you've been a champion for years for certainly the Midwest, but very specifically for Ohio. We are both appreciative and respectful of all that you do to help tell this wonderful story of this wonderful Midwest community in which we live.
Well, thank you. And I have one final question for you, as we are both from Ohio and we know Ohio wines, but for people that, you know, might be listening from other parts of the Great Lakes region, maybe they have wine in, you know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, for example, or other parts of upstate New York around the Great Lakes there. What would they find? What would they find in an Ohio wine that might be similar to what they're used to, but might also be different than what they might be used to in a wine in their Great Lakes community?
Well, we have great good friends in the Traverse City region and on the west coast of Michigan. Great good friends in the Finger Lakes for sure. And what's exciting is that they will be similar, but they will be different. I will take a Riesling, for example. A Riesling grown in Ohio tends to have more melon and have more peachy characteristics, whereas the Riesling that might be grown on Seneca Lake and the Finger Lakes might have a little more minerality. So the exciting thing about exploring in this entire region is to find a wine variety or two that you might have some affinity to, and then begin tasting from all of those various regions, seeing the nuances, seeing the difference, seeing the opportunity for each wine grower to represent the soil in which the grapes were grown, and then represent the techniques that he or she personally can impart in his cellar practices. So it's a journey of exploration. I taught school for a while, and I taught history, and I taught 10th graders, and I had 2,000 years of 20 different civilizations. So I never ran out of things to talk about and to learn personally. That's why this wine business is so joyful and so interesting. For a curious person, there's an opportunity to explore that curiosity on your palate and with a glass in hand. So the interesting things of about Riesling and Chardonnay and the other cool climate things that we grow are always an opportunity to expand your personal life experiences and relax a little for some personal enjoyment too.
Well, let's encourage all of the listeners to explore and be guided by their curiosity. Come to the North Coast. And if you can't make it there to the North Coast of Lake Erie in Ohio, if you're in the Great Lakes, check out your local wine, which is also, I'm sure, incredible and driving an economic engine in your part of the Great Lakes. So Donnie Winchell, thank you so much for sharing Ohio's wine story with our listeners.
I got to take a break, but stick around. When we come back, I'll be joined by Lori Lalik-Lee from Kent State University Ashtabula campus, who'll be talking to me about their special programs to train the next generation of winemakers and grape growers.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back to Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm Capri Cafaro, and this is one of these special episodes that we are doing in conjunction with Great Lakes Now from Detroit Public Media. We've been talking about Ohio wines, and now I am excited to have an opportunity to welcome Lori Lalik-Lee to the program. She's at Kent State University Ashtabula campus, and she's integrally involved in their programs to train the next generation of winemakers and grape growers.
Lori, you wear a lot of hats, so thank you so much for taking the time to join the program.
No problem. It's great to be here, Capri.
Absolutely. Well, I am always excited to talk about Ohio on this program. It is the impetus for my creation of it and also why I'm so passionate about the Great Lakes. We have so much to celebrate in our backyard here in northeastern Ohio and our Great Lake, Lake Erie. You're up there in Ashtabula County up there. Yep. Because you're north of me by about an hour. You're lucky, we're lucky to have a branch of Kent State University that is focused on a number of these industry sectors that, feed right into the wine industry. So explain to us what viticulture and enology are, because some of our listeners might not be familiar with those terms.
Absolutely. So in the simplest terms, viticulture is the growing of grapes, and enology is the making of wine.
That's very simple. That's much easier to understand that than maybe to pronounce enology. So I appreciate that very much.
You're not the first person who's had a problem with that word.
You're adding in a letter or two here or there. So how long has Kent State Ashtabula been offering programs related to viticulture and enology?
So we launched both degree programs in fall of 2011 after about a 2-year process to get the curriculum approved through the state.
Mm-hmm. And what is that curriculum that is offered now? How is it? Has it evolved over the years, over the last decade and change, or has it remained the same?
Well, it has evolved. I think, first of all, so we originally launched associate degrees. So we have both mm-hmm. the associate degree in viticulture and the associate degree in enology. And they are two different programs, but they do overlap considerably. So there are courses that are in both programs. And then in addition to that, in 2018, we launched what we call certificate programs. Mm-hmm. And the certificate programs are programs that are just focused on viticulture and enology. So they're just the core classes that are included in each of those subject areas. And a student can earn a certificate versus a degree, which allows them to jump right into the workforce without taking all of the other college classes, you know, the what we call the Kent core. The things that I tell students all the time is what makes them well-rounded individuals.
Right. Sure. I mean, those things are important, but if you are, maybe switching careers midlife, you're looking to do something different, these certificate programs seem like a really great opportunity to earn the skills that you need to be able to enter into these fields that I would assume are attracting a lot of new people, just because I see how much over the last 15-20 years the Grand Valley wine region up there on Lake Erie has really grown and has attracted a lot of investment, visitors, and a lot of attention as well.
Absolutely. And I would say, the industry as a whole in the state of Ohio has almost doubled since mm-hmm. we launched the degrees in 2011. I don't have current numbers in front of me, but I know it's over 350 wineries in the state of Ohio now.
Wow.
And so it is, or at least 350 permits to be a winery in the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. They may not all have opened yet.
Sure.
But they, so it really has just expanded exponentially. And we see that right here in the Grand River Valley because we've seen new wineries in the last 5 years or 10 mm-hmm. years. And so the industry as a whole just continues to grow. And so it is attracting more and more employees. And in order to improve their skill set before going into that workforce, a lot of them are choosing to come here and complete either the certificates or the associate degrees before they go work in the industry.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I know that this isn't directly in your purview, but I also am aware that Kent State does have a hospitality program.
We do.
And one that is, has some programming or affiliation with the Geneva State Lodge, which is directly on Lake Erie.
Yes.
How does the hospitality program and the lodge integrate with any of the work that you may do?
Well, we integrate with both frequently. So with the hospitality management program, they redid their curriculum. It was during COVID, so it must have been 2020 or 2021, because I was working on that from home. So I distinctly remember it. And we actually integrated our certificate programs into the hospitality and event management degree. So a student that's receiving a bachelor's degree in hospitality and event management can choose to do their 18 credit hours of electives in that program within our wine degrees, or we also have a certificate in brewing technology. Mm-hmm. And so they can choose to do that as their 18 credit hours of electives and earn both the certificate and the hospitality and event management degree at the same time.
Has that been popular? Because to me, I would think that would be really a popular path given the landscape, literally and figuratively, there.
Well, it's very new. So it is picking mm-hmm. up steam, is how I'll put it. So there right. are students that have chosen to do that, and it is starting to increase. So hopefully it will continue to increase in future years as well. And so that really, that's been a great partnership for us with the hospitality and event management program, because there is so much hospitality management involved, particularly in being in a winery.
Yes.
Maybe not necessarily if you're in the cellar just producing wine, but if you're ever spending any time in a tasting room or, in any capacity like that, you're going to need those skills that you learn in the hospitality event management program as part of the work that you're doing. And what we see, particularly in a lot of our smaller wineries in the region, is that sometimes the people who work in the cellar during the week are the same people who are working in the tasting room on the weekends.
Totally. That's absolutely, I've noticed the same.
Right. So it is, so that partnership has been a bonus to us, and I think a good thing for the industry as a whole. And then with the Lodge, you know, we're just, we're so lucky to have that resource in our community. There's no other way to put it. I mean, first of all, it's a beautiful facility.
It
for anybody who hasn't been there and hasn't seen it, it's amazing. And it has nothing but improved over the last 15 and 20 years. I mean, they've added so many features. We actually are part of a national viticulture and enology grant that is partially funded by the National Science Foundation.
Wow.
And which is called VESTA. And we host a VESTA conference once a year to discuss curriculum and to discuss those types of issues to make sure that we're keeping up with what's happening in the industry and being as cutting edge as we can for the students that are coming through our program. And we actually were able to host that summit at the Lodge last May, early June. It kind of crossed over after Memorial Day there. But we hosted that at the Lodge, and we were able to bring in people from all over the country. We had almost 100 participants in the summit, and they were blown away by the facility and the quality of the facility. And then many of them had never been to Northeast Ohio and never seen the Great Lakes, never been to the Great Lakes. They're amazed at the resource that's right in our backyard.
Absolutely. This is exactly, again, why, you know, I do this program and why I'm proud to, you know, do this collaborative work with Great Lakes Now as well, is because there's sort of two groups of folks that are our listeners and viewers. And, you know, those are folks that are like you and I, that probably, you know the greatness of the Great Lakes, celebrate it, want everybody else to know about it. And then people that have never been here, never seen the Great Lakes, have no idea, no concept, and are curious about it. And so I think for both of those audiences, you know, getting to know, you know, we know Lake Erie, but maybe not Lake Huron. So folks from Ohio might learn about another part of the Great Lakes and vice versa, which is just great. So, I mean, the Geneva Lodge and that view of Lake Erie and everything that is there to offer is just really world class. I want to go back to something you were talking about, collaboration with some entities. And I wanted to ask about collaboration with any of the other actual local wineries. Do you work at all with local wineries in the Grand River Valley region to help them do research at all, or, you know, train their employees specifically?
So we have a number of local wineries who have chosen to send employees through our program or have encouraged employees to pursue the degrees or the certificates through us. And so we really do a lot to try to stay in touch with the wineries across the entire state, and particularly right here in our own backyard, to make sure that they're aware of what we have available and what, you know, and what's here, as well as us understanding what they have available and what they're doing. We do have a number of our classes require students to spend some amount of time, whether it's 8 hours in the semester or 100 hours in the semester, depending on the course, doing work either in the vineyards or in the winery to really learn the hands-on skills that are associated with the degree. And so we partner with a number of wineries to help do that, because we can't put all of our students in one place. That would be great, wouldn't it? But not right now. And so we really need to keep those relationships and those partnerships alive and keep them positive, and make sure that we're working with them to understand the changes that they're going through, so that we're teaching our students about that, and then that we're there as a resource to them to provide them students or graduates when they're ready to hire people.
Right, right. Now, what about other academic institutions? I know that there's a grape research facility not too far from Kent State Ashtabula, a little bit further east in North Kingsville on the lake. Do you do any work with that and with Ohio State? Because that facility is associated with Ohio State.
It is associated with Ohio State, and it's phenomenal asset to both the community and the industry. And we do, I consider us very lucky to have formed a very nice partnership with the research station. And we work very closely with the director of the station out there, whose name is Andy Kirk. Mm-hmm. And they grow a variety of grapes under a variety of circumstances in order to do research. And so we partnered with them 2 years ago to pursue some funding to do some research under the research grant that's provided by the Ohio Grape Industries Committee. Mm-hmm. And so we have been working very closely with them over the last 2 years on a couple of different projects, which we hope will be granted additional funding to be able to continue those projects at the end of this 2 year cycle. We recently put in that application actually to get that additional funding, but it's been a good relationship for us because it's allowed our students to participate in research at an associate degree level or even a certificate degree level they wouldn't necessarily have an opportunity to do. And so it allows them to help with those projects and to sort of see the research process. And then it's been a good, we believe that the results will ultimately benefit the industry because we are looking at some ways that we can maybe change some of the perspective on the way we use grapes and wine here. So I'll talk about the one project a little bit. The one project is about how to produce sparkling wine in a natural way. And the term for it is PetNat, is the industry term for the wine that you process this way. And it's gaining in popularity because there's very little, I can't think of the right word. There's very little, you do very little to the wine once you ferment it. You just basically put it in the bottle and let it naturally ferment and bubble on its own. So very little intervention. That's the word I was looking for. So there's some popularity, particularly in larger urban areas where people, it's trendy to drink a PetNat sparkling wine versus something that's been produced with a lot of intervention. Right. But one of the drawbacks to the PetNats is that they're very unstable because you are just basically putting them in the bottle and letting them ferment themselves in bottle to bubble. And so what we're looking at is if there's a way to do a minimal amount of intervention with those wines where we can provide some additional stability so that, one, they're a little bit cleaner because a completely natural PetNat wine is I would say cloudy and a little bit dirty. It tends to have a lot of stuff in it because it's still in the juice and it settles out in the process. And so we're looking at ways that we might be able to provide a little bit more stability and they make something that's a little bit cleaner, but yet still have a very minimal amount of intervention in it to still appeal to that market of people. So it's been interesting. So our students have had the opportunity to participate in that process and sort of, you know, see what we get out of the grapes that we put right into the bottle to do it the natural way. And then the grapes that we are adding some extra steps to the process to do in different ways and to see those results and then to participate in just even the data gathering. I mean, we do an immense amount of data gathering and chemical analysis. The one thing I think people underestimate about the grape industry and the winemaking industry is just how much chemistry is involved. So,
yes, I agree with that. And I think that you could say the same for beer and for cider and for a number of other things.
Anything you're fermenting, there's chemistry involved, or anything you're distilling, there's chemistry involved.
Yeah, Yeah. So it takes quite a bit of training, and you're absolutely right. It sounds like, you know, having that resource there and that partnership has really opened a lot of doors for both the individual institutions, more importantly, the students and the researchers to really engage in meaningful work that is going to have an impact on the industry as a whole, which is, you know, great.
Yes.
So just a sort of final thought from you. I'm just, because this program is focused on the Great Lakes, I'm curious to get your thoughts on why our region has become such a popular place to grow wine. I know that there are some scientific reasons behind that, but also, objective or subjective reasons behind that as well. And I would suspect that being on the lake plays a part in both the subjective and the objective reasons why the wine industry has grown in Northeastern Ohio in particular. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, so I might punt to Donnie Winchell on all of the technical reasons, but I will tell you that it does have to do with the glacial ridges that are here across Northeast Ohio and across Ashtabula County and Lake County in particular. And those ridges and the way the weather comes in off the lake, we see it here. You also see it in places like Traverse City, Michigan, where the temperature of the lake affects the weather along the coastline. And then you add in the glacial ridges that are here and the way it affects the way the wind blows in. And I'm not a geography or a geology major, but it does affect the warmth in the vineyards. And so it allows the vineyards to stay warmer in the fall as the grapes are producing sugar to make them, the natural sugars that are produced inside the grapes, which is called a Brix reading, allows them to ripen more before they need to be picked. So that is why, that is the technical reason as to why this particular region grows such nice grapes, and particularly that we can grow a vinifera grape, which is, you know, the higher end, your Cabernets and your Chardonnays and things that you might not be able to grow everywhere in the area. And then from a subjective point of view, one, yes, I think it is the lake. I mean, I think it's a beautiful region. I mean, we live here, so I think sometimes we take for granted what's in our backyard. But the weather here is beautiful. Well, it's beautiful all summer and fall. It's really only the months of December, January, and February that's not, right?
True.
Unless you're a snowmobiler, I will say, unless you're a snowmobiler, which I'm not, but those people do seem to love it here as well.
That's true.
But no, I mean, I think there's great reasons to come and visit this region of the state, because there is so much here, and there's, you know, in addition to the wineries, there's covered bridges and there's other things to do and see here, water sports, and of course Lake Erie and lighthouses and all of those tourism things that people come here to do. But I also think that part of what makes the winery industry in this area so successful is that if you want to go someplace and drink wine, you want to be able to experience more than one location.
Yes.
So it's nice to come here where we have so many wineries located in a fairly small geographic area where you truly can spend 2, 3, 4 days going from winery to winery. And you can, you know, I of course encourage you to get a designated driver, but you can experience 3 or 4 wineries in a day. Some people, I think, try to do more than that, but you can do that and get the opportunity to travel around and see what's out there. So you're not driving to an area that's an hour away from everything else. You're driving to an area where you're going to be able to experience 20, 25 wineries all right here. And so it really is, if somebody wants to get away for a wine weekend or a week-long trip to wine country, you can do that right here without having to travel to Napa Valley or without having to travel to, you know, another area of the country.
There you go. The Great Lakes, the next frontier the current frontier in wine tourism in the United States. And, you know, obviously we're biased encouraging folks to come to the Grand River Valley region, but there are a lot of incredible wine regions. You mentioned Traverse City, Michigan, but the Great Lakes, Niagara. I mean, there are a lot of regions around the Great Lakes where the wine industry is growing and where related tourism is growing as well. So thank you for your time and for your role in helping train the next generation of winemakers and grape growers.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thank you for having me on today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm your host, Capri Cafaro. I'm also a contributor to Great Lakes Now, and this is one of our special episodes, a collaboration between Eat Your Heartland Out and Great Lakes Now. Make sure that you tune in next Thursday for our next installment of our special episodes. This one is going to be one you don't want to miss. It's about the importance of commercial and recreational fishing in the Great Lakes. So check it out on GreatLakesNow.org, HeritageRadioNetwork.org, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at HeritageRadioNetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.